My name is Amaury Rivera. I live in Puerto Rico. And back in 1988, I was working in a nightclub. And there was a musical group there. One of my cousins wanted me to photograph the musical group. And she loaned me a camera with some film. On my way back home, I encountered two small strange men, which I didn't think were men from outer space. And they took me somewhere where there were other people besides myself, other human people, like from Puerto Rico, I guess. From here, another human being showed up. He claimed to be from a distant planet. He was dressed in black. He had a dark skin. He had a black, long black hair up to the shoulders. And he spoke to us with the mouth, verbally, and no telepathic speaking. He showed us various projections, which looked very real, the projections. And he informed us about a whole bunch of things that are even still incredible to me. They returned me to...
What did this holographic projection show?
The holographs were mainly... the first one that I can remember was like a short trip through space. We saw where he came from, where he said to be from. We saw his people. We saw the houses that they used. And the second one was about... a meteor or a rock falling to Earth in the near future, which is going to cause a lot of havoc in the world. This would fall, it's going to fall in very near the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, and those other small islands. But it's going to affect the whole world, not just Puerto Rico. The last one is that they projected was showing us how there was only going to be one government on the planet Earth. They'll be living on some sort of artificial island that's going to be floating in the middle of a dark, black, dirty sea. This man returned me to my car again and left me somewhere different from where the whole ordeal had started. Apparently, they took me with car and all. After this, at this given time, I heard some jets in the sky, and I still had my cousin's camera, and I took the pictures, four of which I'm making public nowadays.
So the jets followed the UFO?
Yes, it was. They seemed to be surveilling it. I only got to capture just one of the jets in the photograph, but there were three of them. Or maybe I got in one of the photos one, and in the second or third I got one of the other ones, because they would go around it very far away, and while this one was closer, and turn, you know, very far, very far. And by the time this one was coming back, another one was turning over there. There was always one or the other close to the object, to the UFO.
Other witnesses contacted Amaury himself.
So far, between 1988 and 1992, I've been able to localize seven of these people. Because I've gone on different TV shows and different articles, and I've always been asking if anybody remembers anything similar happening to them in that year, during that time, Mother's Day, to please get in touch with me. And I have gotten in touch with hundreds of people, but out of the hundreds, seven definitely were there with me. I still have seven to go. Maybe I'll never find them. Maybe they'll see this.
Actually, Amaury Rivera was intimidated and pressured by government agents to hand over his pictures.
Well, a short time after the incident, three men showed up at my home in Puerto Rico, and one of them stood in their car downstairs. And they claimed to be from CIA, and they handed me two pieces of paper, which I was so nervous I couldn't really read, but I remember seeing the letter CIA, which is the intelligence agency from the United States, and they said that it would be easier and better for me if I handed them the photographs and the negatives. But they did not say, you know, what photographs or what negatives. They didn't specify. And I just told them that I did not know what they were talking about. And they said it would be easier because we have an order for to register your house, to look through your house. And I said, well, go ahead, be my guest and look. And they looked, but they couldn't find them because I had hit them very well.
Well, first of all, I want to say good evening to everyone. And I'm really nervous, so please bear with me. I've never spoken in front of, you know, a group of people. Wendell invited me over so that I can explain more or less what happened regarding the pictures. It kind of started back in New York, where I was born and raised. And I was working at a hotel there for a while. And I got a phone call from one of my aunts in Puerto Rico telling me that my grandmother was ill at the time. So I went out to Puerto Rico to see how my grandmother was. She was the woman that raised me, by the way. And as it turns out, while I was there, she got better. And I kind of like fell in love with the island. I had visited there before. But I wasn't born there, and my parents were. So all I know is that when I went back to New York and while I was working, I worked in a hotel, not as big as this one, but I was a waiter there. That's on 7th Avenue and in Manhattan. And I just kept thinking about going back there. It almost became like an obsession. I just kept thinking, you know, I want to go back there. I didn't really know why. And maybe because of its beauty or something, I don't know, or the way people behave there, you know, it was so different from New Yorkers, you know. And so, next thing I know, I went like berserk and I like sold most of my stuff. And the stuff I didn't sell, I gave away. I had this little Pekingese dog I took with me. And, and when I got there, there weren't too many jobs available, but I already had, you know, thought the scheme about sell hot dogs, or buy a little hot dog cart and just sell hot dogs and make a living out of that. I wouldn't become rich, but I'll make a living out of it. So while I was there, when I first got there, one of my cousins, a female cousin, and we call her Fat Tata, she comes up to me and she tells me she heard over the radio that they were offering a waiter's job in this nightclub. It's called Casablanca, and that's in Hormiguero, that's near Cabo Rojo. So as it turns out, I went for the interview and I got the job, and I was working there for a while. And towards Mother's Day in May of 1988, my cousin, again, she had heard about the job through the radio. Now she heard that this group, I wasn't familiar with the group, but she was, a Gran Combo. They were going to be present there, so she was a big fan, or is a big fan of theirs. And she said, since I got you that, you know, I helped you get that job, well, I want you to do me a favor and get me some photographs of the Gran Combo. So I said that I would, even though I didn't really want to, because I had just started working there and I didn't, you know, they were on a platform like this, and it was a huge place with the little tables, a nightclub. And I didn't feel it, you know, I had just started working there, I'm going to be there taking pictures. Anyway, I said yes. So I thought she would probably forget about it, but when the night came, you know, she didn't forget about it. So she gave me the camera and with the film in it, and she showed up with an album, one of their old albums, and she wanted me to have them autograph it. And I said, sure, you know. She kept reminding me that she helped me get the job. So I went to work with the camera, and I had bought this broken down car, a little Toyota, I think it was 71. So something like that. I don't remember the date. So from where I live at to Hormiguero, where the nightclub was located, I had had some of my cousins, before I started that job, they would take me back and forth so that I can know more or less, you know, how to get back from the nightclub to my grandmother's house, which is my house now. So the route that they showed me to go through was called, there was a road called La Bajura. It's like a real creepy place, and there's no houses or anything. And but that was the only way I knew how to get there, back and forth. And this particular night, I took some of the, it was a one of those Instamatic camera, the 110, it was a cheap camera. And as I was going home that night, or that morning, because I left at 4:30, I was just driving along in my car, like Martin had said before, and there was fog, but that was nothing unusual, because the rest of the nights I had, you know, come across fog, and that didn't bother me. But some of my cousins had told me that, because in New York I barely drove with the taxis and buses and subways usually, so I didn't have much experience driving, so I would take it easy anyway, besides of the fog and besides of the cows or the horses. And my cousins would tell, you know, they had frightened me, you got to be careful, you can't be speeding around here because animals get loose and people have crashed and killed themselves, you know, crashing against cows and whatnot. So I'm driving along, I'm going like really, really slow, and that's when I hear a noise like on this side of the car. In that moment, I thought it was like a goat or something small. I just saw it out of the side of my. And when I looked to the side, it was a. At that moment, I thought, you know, what the hell is this? A midget with a mask on or something? And a whole bunch of weird thoughts went through my mind at that moment. I couldn't really figure it out. But the funny thing is, when I was gonna hit the gas pedal to get the hell out of there, I hit the brake, and when I don't know why, I just got nervous and I hit the brake, and the car just stopped all of a sudden. And next thing I know, on this side, the same little thing I had seen, it's like a little man. Not exactly the way most people describe them. Like they didn't look gray. They were white, and their arms were like in proportion of their body and whatnot. But their heads were big, and the eyes weren't exactly the way most people describe them, with the big points in the back. But they were big eyes. They were like cow eyes. So when I seen the thing that was over here, the little man, it was over here now. So I was like debating whether all this, it's taking time to me to tell you, but all this happened like in a matter of seconds. I'm debating whether I should like run over this little thing, but at the same time I kept thinking if it was a little boy or a midget or some freak or something, I don't know what it was. And then that's when I heard noise on this side, and when I looked to the side, I thought that the one that was over here was the same one that was on this side. It turns out that there was two of them. It wasn't the same one. I was wondering how had it gotten from this side to this side that quick, but it hadn't moved. The other one was still there. So that's when the one on this side opened the door of the passenger side. And basically there, that's when I like fainted. Some people say that these things put me to sleep or whatever. I in my opinion, I fainted. And I urinated on myself, you know, I weed on myself. And next thing I know, when I woke up, I was somewhere else, and it was daylight out. And I'm sitting in the car and I'm crying, I can't really explain why I was crying. All I know is just crying. And I knew I was somewhere else. I was sitting inside the car, but I was somewhere else. And that's when I heard those jets that nowadays I know that they're F-14s or whatever they are, but I just knew they were military jets back then. And I heard the noise, and when I got up, I seen the, I guess what people, the flying saucer thing, I seen it there, the UFO, the craft was just floating in the air. It didn't make any noise, and that's when the planes came in. There were three of them. They started going around them, and I just grabbed the camera, like, again, so, you know, people who had investigated the case, they tell me that it might be that I was, like, induced to grab the camera or whatever. I'm not really sure. Or if I did it on my own, or if I was supposed to do it, I don't know. I know that I took the camera and I started taking pictures, but only when I would hear a beeping sound, exactly like the ones that you hear on a digital clock, a watch. So that's why I kind of freak out even almost four years now. I still freak out when I hear that noise. I may be sitting next to somebody and I hear the little watch goes off, and that kind of freaks me out. But that's how I got the pictures, basically. And after that, I just went home. I took the pictures. The spaceship, or whatever you want to call it, that round thing, just like tilted to the side and just took off. And the jets, I thought, were gonna follow it, but what they did was they went the other way. They don't make no sense, but that's the way it happened, instead of following the object. So after that, I got in my car and I just turned it on and just started driving. I didn't know where I was. And so finally I came across these houses, and there was this lady with a hose in front of her house, and I asked her, you know, which way is it to Cabo Rojo? And she's like looking at me like, this guy, what's wrong with him? He's in Cabo Rojo and he's asking which way is it to Cabo Rojo. But what I really wanted to get to town, because once I was in the center of town, I would, you know, like know my way back to my grandmother's house. So, and the lady directed me to certain roads, and the thing was, I got home. When I got home, my grandmother says, I don't remember. She tells me that she asked me what was wrong with me. Why had I gotten there, you know, later than usual? And she says I mumbled something and went into the room. I don't remember talking to her when I got in, but I have to believe her. And all I know is I took off my clothes and I went to sleep. I slept all day that day, and which was kind of unusual. And my grandmother says again, I don't remember this. She says that I got up and I made myself like a sandwich or something light, and didn't speak or anything, and just went back to bed again. So when I got up the next day, I didn't remember any of the thing with the big-headed little man, or the airplanes, or, you know, the jets or the craft or anything. In my mind, it was like I had left the nightclub and gotten home like any other night. And I had given the camera back to my cousin, and I said, here, I took some pictures of it, of the your musical group or whatever. And she asked for the record. She wanted them to sign, and I didn't have the nerve to go up there and ask them for their autograph, so I just left it behind the bar over there, and I told her that somebody had taken it, and that I didn't know what happened to it. But she's not here now, so she won't know. So the thing was that when she had developed the film, she calls me up and she says, Junior, my family, they call me Junior. He said, Junior, come on over. I want you to explain to me what are these other pictures. And I said, what are the pictures? She said, just come on over. And she lives in Cauro too. So, this thing's gonna roll off. So I went to get in my car, went over there, and she said, here. So when I'm looking at the pictures, which are, you know, there are more pictures than the ones that were shown here, but most of the other ones are not for publication or even, you know, those are private, those are personal. And the thing was that when she showed me those pictures, that's when it hit me. And I kind of freaked out. I got in my car and, you know, I took the pictures with me and I went back home. And she got like real nervous because she kept talking to me and I didn't answer her. So by the time I got home, she had called my grandmother and told her, you know, what's wrong with him? I showed him these pictures that were with the rest of the pictures he had taken, and he kind of freaked out and he just got in his car and left, and I'm afraid he could have an accident on the way. So my grandmother's still talking to my cousin on the phone. That's when I get home and I just went into my room and I locked myself away, and I didn't want to talk to anybody. It wasn't really that I didn't want to talk to anybody, it's just that I couldn't talk. You know, it wasn't that any being had my, you know, was controlling my throat or anything. It was just that I just couldn't talk. And so I stayed in the room for a while, and you know, my cousin started showing up. That female cousin came on just the way she was, in her robe and with her kids in the car. And before I knew it, my whole family was like a little get together at home, and they're banging on the door and, you know, come out, what's wrong? And they wanted to find out what was happening. So I just couldn't talk to anybody at that point. So I spoke to one of my little cousins and I told him, just tell anybody to leave me alone and I'll explain later. And the thing is that it wasn't until the next day that I was able to talk to just my aunt and my grandmother about the situation. I told them, you know, this is what happened and this is what I remember of it. And well, they kind of freaked out too, but then they all had a different opinion. My father said it was the demons, and you know, we were brought up like, you know, Jehovah Witnesses, so that was another problem. So I didn't really know what to think of it. At one point, I thought it would, you know, I said, well, there must be demons, or I didn't have no explanation for it. And the thing is that I stopped working at that nightclub, and we kind of stopped talking about that event at home, and we just kind of like just put it behind us. I had difficulties because I couldn't leave the house at night. If I did, the car had to be like packed jam, and I used to get I don't get them anymore. I used to get nightmares. I mean, real violent ones. You know, like these little things were chasing me and a whole bunch of crazy things. And at the same time, I was affected, but I was affecting my grandmother and my whole household. They would have to get up. They would have to get up in the middle of the night and like come into my room and console me or whatever. But, you know, time passed. And I kind of forgot about it, about the same way I've forgotten about other horrible things that happened to me in life. But I stopped working there because my cousins, they couldn't keep taking me back and forth because I wouldn't go by myself to the nightclub. So I stopped working there, and finally that little dream I had about the hot dog cart, I got that together and I started selling hot dogs. So we had kind of forgotten about that. So the thing is that once I'm preparing some meat that I put on the hot dogs and that at home, and something. So I don't know why. I'm not psychic, or I've never had like a psychic experience or anything. But I, for some reason or another, I went into the room where I had these pictures were just thrown in a drawer, and I never I didn't use that drawer for anything else. They were just there. And in this yellow envelope I had put them in, I put, for some reason or other, I just took them out of the drawer and went into the outside where we have the little doghouse, and I pasted them underneath, like if this was the doghouse, underneath there, inside the doghouse. And I gave the dog, you know, it was kind of part of the routine was giving my little dog some water. So I don't know, I added that to the routine that morning for one reason or another. That evening when I get home with all my hot dog junk, my grandmother's watching TV and I'm putting the stuff away in the refrigerator, and that's when this man showed up at the door, and I thought he was even a Jehovah Witness or a Mormon or somebody at the door. Like, he was well dressed, and so he says, we have a screen door, and he's just standing there, and I look, and he says, in Spanish, he says, are you Amaury Rivera? I said, yeah. And he didn't say, could we come in, or nothing. I didn't say come in either. He just, like, barged in, and behind him there was two other men. And the first thing he did, he handed me some papers, and he said, we're here for the negatives. And when he gave me the papers, I started, like, looking at them, but I got real nervous, and I couldn't really, like, read or figure out what is said on there. And he said, we have an order to search your house and make it easier for us. Just give us the negatives. So at that point, my grandmother, you know, she's an old woman. So she got real nervous, and she was about to, like, to spit out, you know, give it to them, or something along those lines. So I looked at her like, you know, shut up. And I told him, I don't know what you're talking about. And he said, you know what I'm talking about. I said, I don't. So he says, well, you either hand them over, or we're just going to have to look through the whole place, and we know you have them here. And I said, again, I don't know, you know, what you're talking about, but let's leave my grandmother, which is my mother, out of this. So they let my grandmother go downstairs to my aunt's house. And down there, she, you know, she had, not a heart attack, but she got all nervous. She started crying, and that's another story, downstairs, because we live above my aunt's house. There's another little house on top of that house. So there was another scene going on downstairs, while upstairs these guys were demanding something that I was telling them I didn't have. So I said, well, just be my guest. I turned the TV off, and they looked everywhere. They looked in the funny thing is that the first place they looked was in that drawer. That bugged me out. And but they looked every place. They looked in the refrigerator. They looked in places you wouldn't think of looking, but they looked there. And they weren't messy. You know, I was expecting, though, like in the movies, that they you see the detectives come into the house and they mess everything out. No, they didn't do that way. They were very like meticulous. And so. But they did take every other negative, like at home. Well, now that we have more of them, but none of the negative, like birthdays and, you know, things that have nothing to do with UFOs. They took all those negatives. They kept putting them in a bag. I don't know what for. Maybe they thought maybe they were amongst them or something, and they would look at them later with, you know, with time, one by one. So they left, and then my aunt, when I spoke to my aunt, she told me there was another man sitting in the car waiting for these other guys there. So there was four of them. Three of them came up, and one of them sat in the car. So basically after that, I have my brother's in the Marines, and at that time him and his wife were stationed in Japan. So me and another cousin of mine, we the thing was that we got those pictures to my brother, and he put them in a safety and deposit box in Japan or something like that. I knew they were secure with him. So after I sent that to my brother, years passed by, and And I decided, you know, I was never going to talk to anybody about it. And my brother gave me advice. He had heard weird stories in the Marines about what happens to people who see these things, and people who have evidence, you know, that they make them disappear. And my brother, you know, he scared me. I said, wait a minute, so I'm just going to forget this. But I had shown it to certain people, and of course, you know, my family, they can't keep shut about it, and they might tell somebody at their job. And the thing is, word got around, and I would basically deny it. I would say, no, I don't know nothing about that. So, like, 2 years had gone by, and I didn't think about it any longer. And at home, nobody ever brought it up. Until one day, and the people I'm here with, they showed up. It's not even too clear how they got in touch with me. But they had heard about the photographs or something, and they would come up. And I would deny it to them, too. And say, no, I don't know. I'm not that person. I don't know what you're talking about, and you have the wrong guy. Because I didn't know who they were, really. They claimed to be from UFO investigators, or they claimed to be, you know, the editor of a magazine, but I didn't know them. So I thought they could have been part of the government, for all I knew. I wasn't about to admit to them. But as time went by, and I got to know them better, and they showed me that the magazine, they said, I don't know, the thing was that they inspired trust. And finally, well, you know, I admitted to them, yeah, this is what happened. And I showed them a few of the snapshots, and they suggested that maybe this should be made public, because that people should know about it. And so, and initially I said no, but then I started taking, because during this whole time, that time that I didn't kind of remember from the moment when that small little thing opened the door on this side, that I fainted, from that moment to the moment I had awakened in that other place, there something else had happened, that apparently that was what was causing the nightmares and whatnot. So with the help of Jorge Maltin and Sosa and a few other people, amongst them I have a lot to be grateful to, this woman who Jorge Maltin introduced to me. Her name is Maria Victoria, and she made me, she's very special. She made me see things in a different light. Like, and nowadays if I hear somebody joking about UFOs, I don't get like all upset or freaky about it. I can handle it. Well, the thing that had happened was that when I fainted or whatever it was at that time that they opened the door, that the little guy on this side opened the door, I had woken up somewhere else besides that last time when I woke up when the jets were there. And in that place, there were other cars there. There were like 10 or 15 cars, and I can't, you know, people ask me, but how many exactly? I don't know how many exactly. And there were like 10 to 15 cars there. When I'm sitting there, it looks like if it was an underground parking or something, I'd say, now, you know, where I couldn't even think straight. You know, I knew I didn't know where I was. But a moment later, that little thing showed up again, and he opened the door, and I couldn't move again. I don't know if it was that this thing has the power to freeze you, or I was just, you know, really scared. You know, now that I mentioned scared, I just wanted to say this. I don't understand, like, when nowadays I'm not all that scared about it, but still, in the beginning when I would speak about fear and how afraid this made me, and I would hear people come up to me and say, oh, I wish this would happen to me. Like, I don't really understand why would anybody want this to happen to them. And or other people would say, you know what, you shouldn't be afraid, or you shouldn't feel this, or you shouldn't feel... That's the way I felt. I felt terrorized. And Well, anyway, the next thing I know, this little man, to call him that, he puts he opens the door again, and he starts, I don't see the other one. He opens the door and he starts putting his, the small hand towards my forehead. But I remember when he's putting the hand towards my forehead, like, it's like, I want to get away, but I was too scared to do that. And when he put his hand on my forehead, that's when I blanked out again. So then the next thing I know, I woke up somewhere else. I was seated with these other people. And like I have mentioned before, they seem to be either, you know, like Hispanic or Puerto Rican. And they were seated there. We were seated in a room where, well, I think it was a room. It was like, it's very hard to describe. It was a place where if you were to be standing in the middle of that place, you would think like it's an infinite room. Even the seats were like, would blend into the whole scenery. That maybe if they just left you in that place, you would trip over one of those seats or whatever they were, you know, where they sat us. So there they showed, there was like 15 or 16 other people there. You know, people that, like me, and they were afraid and they were scared, and I felt for them, but I couldn't do nothing for myself, so I couldn't do nothing for them. And I've had a lot of guilt feeling about that, especially this one lady that she looked like she needed more help than I did, but I couldn't help her. It wasn't that they were hurting her or anything, they weren't even nowhere near her, but she was, you know, she was freaked out. And at this point, from behind us, in walks in this man, a human being, with the two little big-headed ones, and they stand in the front of this place, wherever that was, and they start. He starts, because I never heard, you know, the little ones either talk to me, not even the way people say with the mind telepathically, or the man either. I mean, if he does have that ability, he never never demonstrated it there. He spoke with his mouth, and he spoke a perfect Spanish. He spoke Spanish better than me. And they just spoke about a whole bunch of crazy things, and you know, it wasn't what he was saying wasn't directed towards me alone. It was towards the whole group. And so he picked, at one point he noticed that everybody's like attention was focused more on one of the, you know, the little creature things, and we weren't really paying attention to what he was saying. So he picks up the little man the way you would pick up a 7-year-old child or something, and he picked it up and he put it around. He just picked it up, and the little thing put the legs around him, and he started going like this on his head, and he's saying, "You see, you don't have to be afraid of it, because it's not going to do anything, because this thing is something that we make, and he's the one, you know, basically that." The little one is sent out like to do their dirty work or something, because they don't want to expose themselves to us, I guess. And so they showed a whole bunch of things, and most of the things they showed there were more, or are more they're, you know, they're stronger, they're more powerful sometimes than the actual, you know, being scared of the little ones. Because like I've told Jorge Martin, that if that man that spoke to us, that they would approach me in a civil manner, because that was another thing I had to work with, was all the anger. I had a lot of anger because you know, I felt like how could these people, no matter, you know, no matter where people are from, whether it be a Russian, a French, or an American, nobody has the right to grab you and take you away somewhere where you don't want to. You know, no, even if you're from another planet or wherever you're from, that doesn't give you any special rights or anything. You still, you know, I think I still have to be respected regardless. So that was, I had to deal with fear, anger, and a whole bunch of things, you know. And that's it.